The Fred Allen Show, specially rebroadcast for the American Armed Forces and their allies. Here are Fred Allen, Portland Hopper, the Mighty Allen Art Players, High Low Jack and the Dame, and Al Goodman, his chorus and orchestra.
Tonight we pay tribute to the Boy Scouts and bring you an old boy who is still a pretty good scout. He's Fred Allen.
Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Jimmy, you're not kidding about my scout background. I started in as a Cub Scout, worked my way up to be a tenderfoot, and then on account, a little later on in my adolescence, on account of my buck teeth, they put me in the Beaver Patrol. Boy, I look like.
My friend, did you have buck teeth as a boy?
Buck teeth, Jimmy. I could eat an ear of corn through a knot hole when I was... when I left the... Now I could if I could get the ear of corn. I could still get the knot hole. When I left the Beaver Patrol, I became an Eagle Scout. For 2 years, I lived in a nest, Jimmy. Ah, those were happening. Molting, you know, and part-time work. Those were happening. I didn't lay eggs until just tonight. I mean, as long as I was an eagle, I never thought of it. Ah, but those were the happy days, James. Tying knots, doing good deeds.
Fred, what was your outstanding good deed, would you say?
Well, as I think back hurriedly, Jimmy, I would say my outstanding good deed was consummated during the last war. I was over at the Grand Central Depot. A lot of soldiers were leaving for camp. They were kissing their girls goodbye. And at the edge of the crowd was a little midget.
A midget soldier?
He was in the infantry, Jimmy. This midget soldier had a girlfriend 6 feet tall. He couldn't kiss her.
Oh, you helped the midget kiss his tall girl.
I put him up to it, Jimmy. And that was my... that was my good deed for...
Mr. Allen!
Well, for... Portland, you're just in time. Jimmy and I have been discussing Boy Scout Week. Have you ever met any scouts?
Papa was a Boy Scout.
Really?
That's how he met Mama.
Oh, how?
Papa followed some bear tracks in the woods. When Papa overtook the bear...
Yeah?
It was Mama.
That's silly. How could your mother make tracks like a bear?
Mama was walking in her bare feet.
Bare feet. That's one on me, huh? Brother, this program is starting to sound like it pays to be ignorant. Tell me, where is your mother tonight?
Well, Mama and I were going to see the new Frank Sinatra picture, but Mama had to stay home.
Well, why?
Mama has laryngitis. She can't scream.
Oh, well. There's no fun seeing Frank Sinatra if you're no fun, huh? An old R I had left over from last year's oyster tea. There's no fun seeing Frank Sinatra if you're just going to sit there. I mean, after all,
that's what Mama says.
Well, you know, Frank has a swell radio show of his own now, and it won't be long before he's another street singer. And street reminds me, we'd better start for Allen's Alley.
What's your question tonight?
Well, last week, the War Production Board said that this coming year, there's going to be a shortage of alarm clocks. People are going to have to make their old alarm clocks do. And so our question tonight, appropriately enough, is, now, how is this alarm clock shortage going to affect you?
Shall we go?
Well, if Mr. Goodman, who has been in Florida, with Tampa with the music, wheel away. Well, Portland, here we are back in Allen's Alley. I wonder if Senator Bloat is in.
Yes.
Senator Bloat, what is your reaction to the shortage of alarm clocks?
If my bill, the Bloat bill, goes through, a signal will be given in Washington. Every person in America will be awakened mornings automatically.
You awaken people automatically? Well, how are you going to get 130 million people out of bed at the same time, Senator?
Short wave.
And if the short wave doesn't work?
I'll get a tall whack.
Well, there are no flies on the Senator. There are some things even flies won't stoop to. Let's see what's cooking next door.
Well, what is it?
Mrs. Prawn, has the alarm clock problem bothered you?
Yeah. My alarm clock broke last week. I had to get something new.
Well, what did you finally work out?
I took the cuckoo out of my cuckoo clock and put in a live rooster.
A live rooster, huh?
Yes. Across from the cuckoo clock, I put a sun lamp.
A sun lamp.
When the rooster comes out at 6 o'clock...
Yes.
He sees the lamp shining.
Yes.
The rooster thinks the sun's rising.
Uh-huh.
The rooster crows. I wake up.
Now, wait a minute. How do you get the sun lamp to shine at exactly 6 o'clock?
At 5:30, I get up and turn the sun lamp on.
Well, when the rooster wakes, Mrs. Prawn, there are two crows in the room. Let's try next door.
No.
Mr. Nussbaum, how are you making out with this alarm clock business?
My alarm clock, a big Benjamin, is for 6 months not working.
Well, how do you get up morning?
Where I am living is next door, Mrs. Mankiewicz, a delicatessen.
Oh, delicatessen.
Mrs. Mankiewicz, who is confidentially an early riser, is waking me.
Mrs. Mankiewicz sleeps in the back of the delicatessen?
On the coleslaw.
On the coleslaw?
Yeah.
Well, what happens when Mrs. Mankiewicz gets up?
She is putting her kitty, a little pussycat, out in the hall.
And?
From upstairs, from downstairs, is coming dogs, all sizes, to chasing the kitty.
Uh-huh.
The kitty is yowling, the dogs is barking. Mrs. Mankiewicz is yelling, the neighbor is screaming.
And this terrible racket?
That is scaring my canary, who is eating his breakfast. From the canary's beak is dropping on the floor one bird seed.
And this one bird seed dropping?
It is waking me up. I'm a light sleeper.
Well, again, we find ourselves at the end of Allen's Alley. What lurks behind this last door?
Good evening, all. Upsa Daisy, Falstaff's here to bake like crazy.
Please, Falstaff, tell us that you have no poems tonight.
Au contraire, old boy. Have you heard who put the kipper in Mrs. Murphy's slipper? You haven't heard that?
No. There's an egg to go with it now. No? Could have put a sturgeon in there. Could have laid his own egg as long as... No, I haven't heard that, Falstaff.
How about this? She blushed and said you couldn't be ruder as I tweaked the fin on her barracuda.
No. No, no.
The party broke up. Guests reached for their coats when Mother started singing Mersey Doat.
Now, wait a minute. For your information, tonight we are talking about the shortage of alarm clocks.
Precisely why I am here. I have written a poem.
What is your alarm clock poem called?
Man's Best Friend.
Well, how does it go?
The poet says woman is man's best friend. The cynic says a dog, any breed. The sportsman says his best friend is a horse, any species of steed. But my best friend is an alarm clock, and I am a man among men. You can have dames, dogs, and horses. A true friend is my little Ben. In the morning, a woman will call you. A dog will start licking your hands. A horse will neigh neath your window. But my little Ben understands. I've overslept every morning this week, and my little Ben never has spoken. I say a man's best friend is alarm clock, but only if the darn thing is broken.
And as Minnie Singer Openshaw... struts into the night, Maestro Al Goodman rises baton akimbo to welcome Hilo, Jack, and the Dame. The song, San Fernando Valley.
I'm packing my grip, and I'm leaving today. I'm taking a trip, California way. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam and make the San Fernando Valley my home. I'll forget my sin. I'll be making new friends where the West begins and the sun sets. 'Cause I've decided where your truly should be. And it's the San Fernando Valley for me.
Think that I'm fifty, he will be waiting when my lonely journey is done. And kindly old friend promise, made us a promise, you will make the two of us one. So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can follow my name, care of all that be. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam and make the San Fernando Valley my home. San Fernando Valley, that's right up my alley. I'm gonna settle down in California, eh? And just keep busy doing nothing all day. I'll be so happy to settle down
and never roam and make the San Fernando Valley my home. Thank you, Marlo, Jack, and the Dame. That was Mersey Doat in synopsis form, played by Al Goodman and his Swing and Sway for $2 a Day Orchestra. I have had a hard week.
Oh, did something go wrong?
Oh, everything has gone wrong. Last Thursday, I bought that new book by Luella Parsons, you know, The Gay Illiterate. When I got the book home, I found 4 pages were missing. Well, I went back to the bookshop. They sent me to the publisher.
Did he tell you where to go?
In no uncertain terms. By now, I was pretty mad. I read that Luella Parsons was here in New York, so I took my book and went over to her hotel to see her. As I entered the door of Miss Parsons' suite, a voice said...
Why, Fred Allen.
Luella Parsons. Well, Luella, I came to ask you...
Why, do you have a copy of my new book, The Gay Illiterate?
Yes, Luella, that's why I'm,
We have something in common, Fred. That title should fit you, too.
Gay Illiterate? Well, I'm not gay, Luella.
But you see, I heard you on Information Please last week.
You heard me on Information Please, huh? You mean I sounded illiterate?
Well, you reminded me of Dr. IQ when he was just an intern.
Well, it's very hard to make good on Information Please, Luella. John Kieran carries bird's eggs in his pockets, and the bird's eggs keep hatching, and Kieran's pockets keep peeping, you see. FDA wears cheap union suits. When he starts to perspire a little, his sleeves shrink and his arms keep flying up. Fatterman's nose is too smooth. His glasses keep slipping down on his nose. So between the peeping in Kieran's pocket, FDA's arms flying up, and Fatterman's glasses sliding up and down, it's very hard to keep your mind on the questions. That's what my alibi.
You didn't come here tonight to complain about information, please.
Well, no, Luella. It's about your book.
Oh, well, that's really very nice of you, Fred. The Gale Literate is on the bestseller's list.
Well, I know that. I know you've been auctioning off copies of your book autographed by the leading Hollywood stars at war bond rallies around the country. I saw all of that in your column.
Oh, I didn't know you read my column, Fred.
Oh, I read your column every morning as soon as I finish Dick Tracy.
I'm glad to know you're one of my fans.
Oh, yes, Luella. My two favorites are you and Flat Top.
You read the Gale Literate,
Fred? Well, not yet, no. Is it anything like that sequel to Undercover, In Bed We Cry?
There's nothing undercover about my book. It's the story of my life.
The story of your life in how many volumes?
One volume. How old do you think I am?
Shall I be brutally frank, Luella?
No, for heaven's sake, no.
The real reason I'm here, I bought a copy of your book, and four pages are missing. Now, with four pages gone, it's like getting a copy of Esquire with just the stories.
I have my book here. I can read you the missing pages.
You can read me the missing pages? Well, that'll be swell. Let me see. The missing pages are 187, 88, 189, and 190.
Now, wait till I find those pages.
Shall I wet your finger?
No, thanks. I have damp hands.
Oh, lucky you. Good.
Ah, here we are.
Page 187. What does it say there?
The chapter's title is A Star is Born.
A Star is Born. How does it start?
On Valentine's Day, 50 years ago in a tiny town north of Chicago, one of the screen's greatest stars was born. The tiny town was Waukegan.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Oh, no. Oh, no, please. Luella, you mean on page 187?
The life of Jack Benny stars.
And it goes on for four pages?
Yes, it's all about Jack.
Well, I will keep my copy, thank you, Luella. If your book sells for $2, my copy of Gale Literate with those four pages missing is worth $100. If you tear those four pages out of every book, you'll make a fortune.
Now, look here, Fred. I have my own private feud. You're not getting me mixed up with you and Jack.
I see your point. You have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, I certainly do.
Well, before I go, Luella, I know all your life you've written about movie stars. Haven't you yourself ever wanted to be a glamour girl?
Fred, to glamorize me would be a retread job.
Wouldn't you like to be a star in pictures?
I confess. I've always wished to be the heroine in one of those rip-roaring Western pictures.
In a Western. Well, tonight you're going to get your wish, Luella. I have written a Western picture, and you are going to star in it.
But, Fred...
It's too late, Luella. As your picture starts, a fanfare is heard.
Luella Parsons presents...
Luella Parsons in...
Luella's Last Stand, starring...
Luella Parsons.
Produced by...
Luella Parsons.
Directed by...
Luella Parsons.
Dialogue by...
Luella Parsons.
Additional dialogue by...
Luella Parsons.
The story by Luella Parsons is based on an original idea by...
Who else?
Well, Luella, how was that?
I can't complain about the billing, Fred. What part do I play?
Part? Luella, you play four different parts. Four different parts in the picture. You're the star. You see, you play four different parts.
Four parts?
I thought you were quitting on the picture already.
Four parts? Well, say, I don't want to hog the whole picture.
Well, you're the star, Luella. As the picture opens, you are Alkali Annie, a hostess at a desert oasis. Ladies and gentlemen, Luella's Last Stand.
This is a story of the West. Sheriff Allen and his posse have been trailing Killer McGonagall for 2 years. We find the sheriff and his men in the desert, their horses plodding on toward the Purple Hills and Killer McGonagall. The sheriff is hunting us too.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam. Whoa, whoa. What is it, Big Belly?
Over yonder, Sheriff. campfire. The embers are still glowing.
Killer McGonagall just broke camp, Sheriff.
You're right, Bullethead. The killer ate a gopher for dinner. The gopher weighed exactly 1 pound.
How do you know it weighed just 1 pound?
Well, look, the killer left 8 red points in the gopher hole.
Hey, look, Sheriff. There's something moving behind that cactus.
It's Killer McGonagall. Men, surround that cactus.
Hey, it ain't the killer.
It's a woman laying there.
Well, it's Alkali Annie. She looks like she's a-dying.
She must have seen which way the killer went.
She's trying to speak. Annie was the killer.
He went that away.
Let's go, men. Killer McGonagall. Let's go, men.
Hold it, Mr. Goodman. Yes, Luella, is something wrong?
Fred, you said I was going to star in this picture.
Well, yes, why?
Well, in that whole first scene, I spoke exactly one line.
But, Luella, you stole that entire scene.
All I said was he went that away, then I died.
Well, I know. But as you say he went that way, you point, you see. The camera comes in, and we show a big close-up of your finger. We fade out on your finger, and you're through as Alkali Annie.
With a part like this, I'll be through as Luella Parsons.
You'll be another Slim Somerville. In this next scene, you're Cold Deck Dora, the female card shop. The camera fades in on the Big Nugget Saloon at Devil's Dyde, Arizona.
Well, hey, look, man, Sheriff Adams is there. They must be on the trail of Killer McGonagall.
Well, howdy, howdy,
howdy.
Bartender, drinks for the house. It's on me.
Name your poison, man.
Well, we're all drinking the same, bartender. Make it 3 mountain martinis.
What's a mountain martini?
A tall glass of buffalo drool with a puma's eyeball floating in it.
A puma's eyeball?
Yeah, when I say yeah's looking at you, I like to have something looking back at you. Business. Did Bob Heaven see Killer McGonagall?
Yeah, just left. The killer was playing Red Dog with Cold Deck Dora. Here comes Dora now.
Be careful, Sheriff. She's a slickin'.
I know she's a slickin', but I can handle a bullet head. Come clean, Cold Deck Dora. Was Killer McGonagall?
He went that away.
Let's go, man.
Hold it. Stop that music just a minute.
Yes,
stop
it. Yes, Luella. Hold it, Mr. Goodman. Yes, Luella.
Is that all I do with Cold Deck Dora?
All you do? Luella, you were magnificent. The way you played that female card shark. Why, Ida Lupino could pull up an option and learn something. Well, you'll get an Academy Award.
You think so?
Why, you motivate the entire story.
That's all I did.
All you said. You told us which way McGonagall went. You'll get credit for direction.
Oh, I was gone before I began.
Oh, now look, Luella, all these parts so far are just little teasers for your next character, Two Gun Lou. You know the Lou type?
No, but I bet I know what she's going to say.
No, you're wrong. This is the climax. Sheriff Allen and his men have finally cornered Killer McGonagall in a moose nest. The scene opens with a big gun battle. We hear shots.
Well, you better come out of that moose nest, killer. We got you.
Let's move.
Well, that cures my sinus. My nose is gone. Well, here's some lead back at you, killer.
Hey, you got him, Sheriff. There's a white shirt tail waving in the moose nest.
The killer ginned himself up.
The jig's up, killer. Come out of that moose nest, McGonagall.
You got me, Sheriff. I surrender.
Hey, Sheriff. Look who's in the moose next with that killer.
Two Gun Lou.
Yeah, Lou made me surrender.
Why?
Two Gun Lou wants to marry the toughest man in the West. You and me has got to shoot it out.
You reach for your gun, killer.
I'm a reacher. Oh, you got me, Sheriff.
Two Gun Lou, I claim you as my bride.
Stop taking your claim, Sheriff.
I'm telling the world you and me is getting hitched. I've got to find me a telephone.
There's a Forest Patrol phone right over on that tree.
Lucky, a Forest Patrol phone, a pay station, too. I'm phoning. Operator, give me Bryant, 90000.
No, you don't, Sheriff Allen.
Put them two guns down, Two Gun Lou.
I'm not Two Gun Lou now. I'm Luella Parsons.
Oh, Luella.
You're a widow before you're a bride. Why did you plug me?
You were going to phone in the scoop about our marriage. Now, weren't you?
Yeah.
Nobody scoops the well apart.
You mean Bryant 90000?
That's Walter Winslow's number. Take that, you dog.
Broadcast is a presentation of the Armed Forces Radio Service.